building the fashion businesses of the future together. Welcome to the Future of Fashion Business. The Future of Fashion Business is about helping aspiring fashion entrepreneurs and designers start their own successful fashion brands by learning from the best, most experienced people in the industry. I am your host, Esteban Julian.
If you want to join our Patreon or check out the video format of this podcast, make sure to use the links in the description.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Future of Fashion Business. I am your host, Esteban Julian. On this week's episode, I sat down with PR and communications executive and fashion and beauty entrepreneur, Sharon Von Wolfen. Now, this episode is going to be part one of a two-part episode series, just because I thought not only this would be a great long-form conversation to have, because Sharon had so many valuable information to share, but also so that we can have a better opportunity to dive into two pieces or two parts of every guest's story. Every guest that I get on this podcast is a very high caliber guest. And I don't say that to brag, but it's the reality of the type of guests that I sit down and have these conversations with. They're either really high level fashion executives, or used to be really high level fashion executives or luxury executives, or they're really high level fashion or beauty entrepreneurs. So in the case of Shireen, part one, which is this episode, is more focused on her story as a person, because it's very hard to relate with somebody that has had the career that Shireen has had, you know, being the PR and communications executive for some of the biggest luxury brands out there, Tom Ford, Gucci, and a lot of others, just to name a few. But the reality is that people like Shireen eventually start somewhere. You know, they weren't always this like high level entrepreneurs or executives. They started somewhere, they failed, they made a lot of mistakes, and they just found things throughout their careers that worked for them. Ways to develop, ways to progress, ways to make correct decisions, ways to take productive risks. And Shireen's story is a perfect example of that. And in the case of Shireen, part two is going to be more focused on, you know, how she actually went from, you know, being a fashion executive to going to a more entrepreneurial route, you know, starting her own business, starting her own successful beauty brand and stuff like that. But the first part is going to be about her story and how she developed as a person, as a professional. One of the biggest lessons that you're going to learn in this podcast series is the ability to make decisions just because they feel sort of right. And if you're passionate about what you're doing, if you're always being persistent, if you're always showing up, opportunities sort of present themselves to you. And sometimes it's not even a conscious decision when you actually take them or take advantage of those opportunities. Again, it's this feel, as Shireen puts it. It's learning how to feel the opportunities and learning how to feel the decisions, which I think is a very productive way to go about, you know, decision-making in your professional career if you're an artist or creative. Because at the end of the day, people like us, yes, we can be highly rational, but at the end of the day, life and everything is about, you know, feeling, you know, about passion. And Shireen's story is a perfect example about how that route can take you from, you know, being an intern from Europe to, you know, working alongside Tom Ford at the height of Tom Ford's career. So I hope you guys enjoyed the part one of this episode series, and stick tuned to next week's episode series, which is probably going to be part two of this conversation.
Awesome. So Shireen, welcome to the Future of Fashion Business officially.
Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you on. I'm very excited for the conversation. I'm always very excited to talk about PR communications or anything of the sort. It is a fascinating area and something that really is really unique to the fashion industry, you know? So thank you for being here, and very, very excited to have the conversation.
So happy to be here. Thank you for including me.
Awesome, Shireen. So just before we start everything, can you tell us, and this is usually a big question, so you're free to talk as much as you want or dive into any topics that you want. So what's your story so far been like? Like, what's Shireen's story in the fashion industry? How did everything get started?
What's Shireen's story?
Well, and again, don't be afraid to talk a lot.
Yeah, no, I've probably, I think my story is, you know, I feel like I was lucky that my parents always encouraged me to, you know, I feel like somehow in our family, like there was more pressure on the boys to do things right. And I just felt like I always had this, you know, my parents were very, they kind of just always wanted me to do something I really loved. And I've always really loved art. I loved architecture. And I grew up in the country. I grew up in the countryside in Virginia with German parents. And I think that for me, my way has been very organic, you know? So I feel like I've listened to a lot of energy. I've felt my path. I've kind of always done things that I really loved and never thought about the money or, you know, I remember getting my first job and being paid like 35 grand and thinking, you know, and being so proud of it. And I think,
in New York, I'm guessing. In New York, I'm guessing. We're somewhere around there, right?
It was funny because when I graduated from UVA, I couldn't get a job in the States because I was a German citizen.
Oh, okay, okay.
In Hamburg, my first job was in Hamburg working for a PR firm there. But during the interview process, it was just really interesting that you know, you kind of have to not think about the money, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know if I'm just lucky that way, but everything I've done because I've really enjoyed it. And then the money comes as you go, you know? So I feel like that's, and I, from a small age, I was always buying, you know, I remember when the Publisher's Clearing House would send us envelopes and I would buy W Magazine and I was like 10 years old, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that, I come from a family. I have a mother, a grandmother that was very into fashion. She used to always, you know, she lived in Germany. She used to always go to a tailor and have her clothes made. And she would always go window shopping with me in Germany. And I think that I always grew up with this real appreciation of fashion, of beautiful things. I think probably it's also just... I don't think I'm a huge consumer. I mean, I like to shop. I think I'm more of I really appreciate beauty. I appreciate seeing beautiful things. So sometimes for me, just looking at them is enough.
Yeah. So it's like a third person sort of appreciation of the entire industry. Yeah, I get what you mean. Very similar.
Yeah. And I've never felt that it was, you know, I mean, for sure you have moments when you're kind of thinking like, God, I'm not saving lives here. And this is kind of silly, but in general, I've really, really enjoyed the whole process because I think fashion has brought me into so many worlds, you know, and I mean, if I think about the artists that I've worked with and designers that, you know, there's so many links to film, to art that have really enriched my life. And that came through fashion.
Awesome. And with your first job in a PR firm, how did that go from just being, you know, an intern or whatever position you were holding to, you know, an executive for, I mean, some of the most, I mean, at the time, because you were a Gucci during the whole Tom Ford era, wasn't it?
Yes, I was. And it was also very lucky. I really think back and I think of all the places I've been and just this, you know, that I think I've had a lot of luck. Like I always think about that. I don't think I'm that ambitious of a person. I think that I really, I basically started in this agency in Germany because I'd been interning for them in the summer before while I was still at University of Virginia. And I couldn't get a job in the States. And they were, you know, I guess I'd done pretty well. So they offered me a job there. And it was a firm that represented Armani and Saint Laurent at the time. They had Montblanc. They had a lot of great accounts. And it was run by these two fabulous women that literally had no background in PR or anything. I always think of I don't know if you know the funny series, Absolutely Fabulous.
And I have, yeah, I have heard of it, yeah.
And they kind of remind me of those women. I mean, you know, they're just really fun and very, you know, they'd like to dress the part. And so I started interning for them and I remember and then when I started working for them, I was there for maybe 2 weeks. And I remember they said, we're going to send you to Milan to seat the Armani show. And I was like, you know, God, I don't know what to do. Why are you sending me? And I remember they gave me this piece of advice that I think is still one of the best pieces of advice I've ever received. And it was, Shereen, just run around and look busy and you'll be fine. And I think, you know, if I think back to all the shows that I've seen in my life and they've been buzzing with important people and, you know, you have all the editors and you have to see Anna Wintour and, you know, it's a big deal. But basically what you're doing is running around and looking busy. I mean, obviously, you know, you get better at it. You know how to do the small talk. You know how to get people to calm down if they're not seated in the right place. I mean, you get better at it, but generally that is it. You know, you're kind of just making people feel good and welcoming them and making sure everyone, you're being a hostess. So it's funny that somehow the most simple advice is sometimes the best. And I think, I was just really lucky because they were an agency that kind of had all the accounts. They kind of fell into PR before PR was a thing, and they had no background in marketing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then all these big accounts started working with them. And that's also how I met a wonderful woman named by the name of Julia Masla. And she was kind of, always she was kind of my example.
Like a mentor figure.
Yeah, kind of like a mentor. She became a good friend. And she was head of Gucci PR worldwide and needed someone. It was funny because before Tom Ford came on board, Gucci under Molitor, you know that there's that crazy story of the Gucci family and all the crazy stuff that happened. And Maurizio Gucci, who used to head Gucci, didn't like Germany. So Germany had not been established at all. They didn't have any stores. They didn't have, they were not in that market whatsoever. So she really needed someone in that market and had met me in Milan and said, hey, let's do this. And I was like 20, I was right out of college. I think I'd been in the agency for a year. And we started an agency together, and I basically became I was the PR, head of PR for Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. And we opened, stores in Frankfurt, in Berlin, in Vienna, in Zurich, and did big fashion shows. I mean, I remember we see like 600-person fashion shows in Frankfurt, just did this kind of... We really created Gucci in that market. I mean, it didn't exist. And it was a really fun time. It was an amazing time because Tom Ford was really just starting. I saw some of the most amazing collections with him. And really where you get chills, where you kind of see Kate Moss and just the way he did fashion at that time. And I think he still does. He still has that magic. But it was an amazing moment. And I was exposed to so much, I met so many people, I did so many fun things. So it was really, that's kind of how it started.
Awesome. And then the rest of your career progression, did it have a very similar process? Like when you went from Gucci to, Yves Saint Laurent and to Tom Ford, was it a very similar process in the sense that it was very organic? Opportunities sort of presented themselves to you. You took them without really knowing what you were doing and you adapted throughout time?
Yeah. And I think, I was really lucky in that I had, I feel like my American education, I feel very lucky because I was raised in America and went to, the university here. I think that the education system is really good because it really makes you, you're good at presenting, you give speeches, you're confident. So I think I had all of those tools, but then I also had this real sense of comfort in Europe. I mean, my parents sent me to Germany in the sixth grade. I spent 1 year going to school there. And I spent every summer in Germany. So I had a group of friends. I had family there, so I really felt at home in Europe. And I was able to take that chance really, pretty easily. And I think I had a sense of confidence that maybe some people in Europe didn't have from mm-hmm. the way they were educated. And so I think that really gave me a leg up. And at some point, an editor, this is actually really funny, he was the editor-in-chief of Amica magazine, and he asked me for lunch, and which was normal, we always had lunch with the editors, and at some point he said, I would really like for you to be the fashion director of Amica. And I was like, well, I do communications. I mean, I've done things like that, but really, fashion director? I feel like I had the confidence to take that job, and I was young. I think I was the youngest fashion director ever of a German magazine, and I was like 24 or something like that.
Wow.
And it was probably also the toughest experience of my life because it was, I had a team, I think of 8 people that I was managing, all of them editors that were basically twice my age. And most of them had never really left Hamburg. You know, they were all from Germany. They kind of did things a certain way. They never thought out of the box. And I remember going to shows and, you know, and I was, it was really hard because I think I was almost too nice. You know, I was kind of like one of those people who thought, oh, I'll take over this team and they'll all like me. And you know, we'd be one big happy family. And I think in hindsight, I realized that, you know, I was very young and they were, and I kind of got, you know, it was probably too big of a job for me, to be honest.
Yeah. So you sort of fell into imposter syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely had an imposter syndrome. And I think, you know, so many things that I naturally, and I mean, to be honest, like looking back, I really knew what I was doing. I really had an idea of what I wanted to do with the magazine and so many things. Like I remember going to shows and thinking, like, yeah, the shows are nice, but what I'm really interested in, what I think is really exciting, is seeing how the models dress when they come out of the backstage, seeing how the editors are dressed. Like, that's what really gave me the chills because it was so cool. And I remember saying that to my editors and saying, guys, like, this is what we should be covering. Let's get the girls that are the models to give us all their favorite looks and, like, let's put that in the magazine. And they would come back to me and say, oh, you know, that's something we've never done before. And, you know, and we need to be artistic. I mean, most of the fashion shoots up to that point had kind of been these kind of almost blurry images of a sleeve flowing in the wind. And you could never actually see the look. And
yeah, very avant-garde.
Very avant-garde, very ethereal. And I have very much, you know, respect for that. I think there's a place for that. But I think that a fashion magazine, in my opinion, was also a place where you really wanted to know what things look like and what cool people were doing and how they were putting things together. And it's funny because, you know, that actually is what Instagram became and what, you know, and I think Instagram really grew out of this need of people to see real people wearing clothes. And so in a way, I feel like I really knew what I was doing, but I got so insecure because I had these older editors who were kind of saying, oh, you know, she doesn't know what she's doing. She's never been to a fashion show. And I remember also telling all my editors, I said, you know, we're going to go to every show that we're invited to. And they were like, that's impossible. You know, you're crazy and you've never done this before. And I was like, well, let's do it, you know, so let's split up and let's do it. And I think, you know, as an older person now, I can say that I wasn't off track, but I really started feeling very insecure. And I think, you know, and I was also probably, you know, there was a lot of talk and a lot of chatter and, you know, so it was hard. It was really one of the hardest work experiences of my life.
And it was hard from an emotional perspective or from, you know, a results perspective, like you weren't really happy with the work that you were delivering.
I think it was hard from, so what was exciting is that I got to go, you know, I went to all of the couture shows. I went to all the men's, the women's, I flew to Milan, to Paris, to, you know, to New York. I covered everything. So I really saw every show, every backstage. I saw the last Yves Saint Laurent, big show in Paris, you know, so the fashion education was phenomenal. And then also doing fashion shoots, you know, I worked with Sheila Metzner. We flew to, you know, to Maub, Utah. We shot in the middle middle of the desert. I mean, so I did incredible things. But I think what was really hard was just, you know, being kind of on your own a little bit and then having to deal with the politics of a magazine. I mean, I think for sure there was, you know, there was a lot of, there was a photo editor who was very manipulative and she would kind of use me against the fashion team to, you know, it got really, really difficult politically. And then I think also, you know, just a lot of travel, a lot of, having to keep up with, it was tough. It was tough emotionally. And I think it was also tough physically. It was a great ride. Like, I think I learned more in that time, but it was also the toughest. But again, like if I hadn't done that, I would never have seen everything that I saw. I would have only known one or two brands, but this way you really see everything that's out there. And you kind of see fashion from a different vantage point. So I would never trade it. I'm so happy I took that chance, but it was hard.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that experience was the most educational experience that you had when you eventually transitioned from, you know, the executive or corporate sphere of the industry to a more entrepreneurial role?
Yeah. And I was basically, it was interesting because the editor in chief that had hired me ended up going to another magazine. And then a new editor came in kind of with her team, and she thought she could just put me on like a, you know, be the PR of the magazine and I wouldn't be the fashion director anymore. And thankfully, I mean, this is really good advice. I had an amazing contract. So I had, she ended up having to pay me for a year of not, like, I didn't have to work. And I lived in Milan and I learned, you know, I basically moved to Milan, learned Italian, took cooking classes, and I was paid for another year. So that was really just, I think that's the only advice I would really give people is always, if you can get someone to negotiate a contract for you, get really good advice, because it saved me. I mean, had I not had a good contract, you know, she probably could have had me do whatever she wanted and I would have had to do it just to be paid. But because it was so clearly stipulated, you know, she had to keep paying me. And if she wanted to bring in her editor, you know, she just had to keep paying me, which is what happened. And I was, you know, and I think it was still hurtful. I mean, I still really felt like I was almost fired, you know, and which I guess I was. And so it was hurtful. And I think it was also the first time that I really had to think about who I was when I wasn't my job, you know, and if people still cared about me and if I was still an interesting person without a job, without something, you know, cool like Gucci or a magazine behind me. And, you know, I think that's a good lesson too. And then having to pick yourself up, I started interviewing and I pretty quickly realized that I wanted to go to New York. So I started interviewing with Calvin at the time and with Helmut Lang. And then it was interesting because both of them were still at the head of their houses. So it was really interesting just meeting them both, you know, Helmut Lang. And very shortly afterwards, Helmut Lang ended up stepping down and, you know, the company was bought. So thankfully, I would have loved working with him because he's one of the most creative people I've ever met. But thankfully, I didn't because he wasn't there anymore. And a very similar thing happened at Calvin. I was almost going to take that job. And then I remember, I think I got cold feet because there was, you know, I just heard that the company was very political and and then Tom Ford also at that time came and asked me if I would join him again to do, it was actually Lisa Sheik, who was his head of communications, who is still a dear friend. And, she needed someone to do the PR for the US for Yves Saint Laurent for Tom Ford. And so, yeah, I ended up doing that. But and so after a year of Milan, I then moved to New York. And even though I'd grown up in the States, like, New York is so different. You know, you have to kind of, thankfully it was still at a time. I mean, first of all, Yves Saint Laurent at the time took care of my whole visa process, you know, got me a visa because they had to prove that I was the only person who could do this job, which it helped that I spoke French and that I had the European experience. So they basically took care of my whole visa process. They got me a broker to find me an apartment. And then I moved. I was living on 150 East 57th Street, which is like three blocks from where our office was. And I would walk to work every morning in that noise, in that midtown noise. And, you know, again, that was another hard move because New York is tough in the beginning. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know any of the charities. I didn't know, you know, how do you establish a brand in a place that you don't really know socially, you know? And then I kind of had to, you know, I think the one thing I've kind of learned in my work life too is that I don't think people need to be so specialized. I think it's much more important that when you're studying, you're doing something you really love, that really motivates you and interests you. Because later in life, every job you do is like 2 months of learning curve. And then you basically kind of got it. You don't need that much experience to start something that you have never done before. Like you need to really buckle down for 2 months, and it might be a whirlwind, and you might be thrown around a bit. You might have to kind of wing it and act like you know what you're doing. But after 2 months, you pretty much get it. You know what you're doing, and then you move on. So I think that would be another bit of advice. I always feel like people specialize too early, and they kind of think they have to have a business degree, or they think they have to have a fashion degree, or and I sometimes think that boxes you in too much, and then maybe you don't listen enough to what your real interests are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, going back to the benefits of having that confidence to take those opportunities at the first place, you know, because most people are too afraid of that learning curve. They feel that they're not capable of doing it. They feel like they're not ready for it. But as you said, it's just a matter of, if you just jump into it, the learning process, it's very chaotic, but it's very quick.
Yeah,
awesome.
And it gets you somewhere. You know, I think our lives are short. I mean, I think I really see it now. I have two children, and I see in their education that for me, the most important thing is that they have confidence. Like, number one thing, just be confident, not overly confident. Don't think you're better than people ever, but just try things. Like, and don't be afraid to make a mistake, and don't be afraid to fail too. I mean, you know, I think that it's those failures that teach you the most. And it's also picking yourself up and realizing who your real friends are. You know, those are the moments that really, that make you. It's okay. It's like, I'm not afraid of making those mistakes. I think that's that's the big key.
Okay. And would you say that is the biggest skill that you managed to leverage when going into the entrepreneurial route and starting Bastide? Or what would you say, what was the trigger of, okay, I've been in the industry for, I mean, more than a decade. Now I finally want to start something. Like, what triggered that need or that desire?
So after Saint Laurent, I still, I worked as a consultant. So kind of, I think when I got married, I realized that I wanted to have a little bit more freedom. And thankfully, you know, I'd been at Saint Laurent long enough that they wanted me to stay on board in whatever form I could. And so I basically became a consultant. Mm-hmm. And I realized for the first time how much better I was when I was a little bit out of the office, you know, when I could see things, when I wasn't working full time, the connections I could make, you know, just the creativity of being a little bit removed made me almost better. You know, I brought great art projects to Saint Laurent, you know, great connections. Like, I think those, you know, just, it was a great lesson for me. And I think now when you have the COVID situation, you realize that again, that sometimes just taking a step out of the office makes people much more creative and more productive if they're enthusiastic about what they're doing, you know? So if they're loving what they're doing, they're gonna work day and night. And so that was a really great, great kind of experience for me to see, you know, the just taking a step back, how that changed. And then I, after consulting for, I guess, yeah, almost 2 years, I, Tom, at that point, invited me, we were in London, and he invited me to his house and showed me his plans for Tom Ford, for his brand. And I was just, I mean, he's the most charismatic, you know, sexiest man alive. So, you know, being alone in a room with him in his house and him showing me what he was doing, I was like, I'm in, I'm going. he's also, you know, he's been a great mentor too, in a way, because he's just he's so clear, and he's, you know, he's really tough. But in a good way, because he just has such a vision. So he knows. I remember when we were opening the first store, you know, it was this beautiful store on Madison Avenue. It used to be, funny enough, it used to be the original Yves Saint Laurent store that Yves Saint Laurent opened in New York when he first started. And then Tom Ford took it over for Tom Ford. Actually, Tom was supposed to open it as an Yves Saint Laurent store on September 11th. The party was on September 11th.
Wow.
And it never happened because of that. Isn't that crazy? And yeah, but
crazy.
He still opened it as a Saint Laurent store. The opening never happened that day, obviously. But he then took the store over with Tom when he was doing Tom Ford, his own brand, and it became his first Madison Avenue boutique there. And I remember we were, you know, we're hiring a butler, And it was literally like five of us making this happen. And it was so much fun because he had such a clear vision. I remember the editors coming to me and saying, you know, we want to see the clothes before you open the store, you know. And Tom was very clear. He said, you know what, they have to see the clothes when the store opens, because that's what's going to make sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember as an editor and working for him before, always seeing how his shows gave you the chills, you know, and he would master those moments and understand that it's part of that energy. It's not that he was creating a farce or something that wasn't real. He was creating an energy that let you see the clothes in the way that you were supposed to understand them. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a really, I learned so many things from him that you kind of have to listen to how things feel, and that they have to happen organically. You know, I think that one thing I've learned in my life, when you're having an event or you're creating a project, you have to feel the energy. If things are feeling off, if the date's hard to set, and if it's, you know, if it's difficult, then it means you have to kind of pivot, make it change the date, you know, do something else. Like there's an energy to these things. And if you get the energy right, it's going to be right. And if you don't, you know, it'll fall flat. It's really interesting. So, and I think I learned that from him.
Awesome. And when you decided, when you transitioned, how did that help you transition to starting Bastide?
Sorry. Yeah. I'm losing my
train. No, that was a wonderful story. I'm very happy you actually transitioned into that conversation.
So then I had two kids. And I think, I think that for me was there was this realization. I think also it's funny when you become pregnant, you don't really know what it feels like then to have kids, you know. And it was funny, I actually ended up resigning while I was pregnant with my first child from Tom Ford, because I thought to myself, like, I've always been working and I don't know how I'll feel when I have to go back to work. And you know, when this baby's here and I suddenly have to leave the baby. And I said, I'm going to give myself, I've never given myself this time. I'm giving myself this time now to just see when I'm ready to go back. And I think that was a great gift. You know, I think that also I had the ability, you know, Frederick was working. I mean, it was, you know, so I had that freedom. I worked my whole life. I, you know, kind of had a nest egg. So it was all, I was able to do that at that moment. And I think it really gave me a sense of peace while I was pregnant. And then also to kind of see how things feel. And you know, I think having children is another one of the greatest learning curves in your life, because you know, you're kind of really good at what you're doing already in life and work. And all of a sudden you get thrown into the situation that you have no idea. You know, I didn't know how to change a diaper. You have just no clue, and you kind of really have to jump in. And that's been the most magical experience of my lifetime, is these people that you've made and that then, you know, become their own people. And all you can do is guide them. You can't, you know, they're not your life. They will never be what you want. I mean, they'll be what you want them to be, but you can't make them anything. They're already predetermined. Mm-hmm. So I think that's been very interesting. And then I started consulting, and as I got older, I kind of, you know, again, organically, you feel it, you know, you feel when you have the energy again. I think that the other thing I always say to young moms is the energy. I mean, if you're really focused on your kids, it's so hard to, you know, you're just tired a lot. So you have to give yourself a break. You have to sleep, and I think the other thing I always say to young moms, and especially working moms, is that it's really interesting to read biographies of great women that you admire. So like a Katharine Graham or a Peggy Guggenheim. And I think you always see, you know, you always see these, and you always hear those names and think they're just these incredible women. But when you look at their biographies, you realize that their lives are so long, and that they've made so many mistakes, and they've had so many tough times to go through. And at the end of it, it all becomes Peggy Guggenheim or Katharine Graham. You know, she's not great the whole way through. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens in between. But to just not put so much pressure on yourself, and to think that, you know, you will go through times that are tough. You will cry. You will maybe even, I feel like I had postpartum depression when I had my kids because I would hear them crying and they weren't, you know, so I was so tired. And I think that that's okay too, because you have to see it and I think someone gave me really good advice once. They said that, you know, don't take anything personally, whether it's very positive or very negative. You know, if someone says something like, oh my God, you look amazing, you know, you're like, okay, thank you. But don't internalize, don't think too much about it. And the same thing if someone says, you know, you did a shitty job or you did, you know, think about it, but don't, it moves, things move, and don't internalize it too much, because it's all just ups and downs, and it all evens out over the long term. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, then as I realized that things were getting easier and I kind of had a handle on the kids and I knew what I was doing, we bought this beautiful old house in Provence that's a best deed. And it's my husband is from there, he's from Aix-en-Provence. And we started renovating it, which was one of the funnest projects of my life, and really trying to be authentic to the area. You know, we kind of did the beautiful tomette, which are those kind of ceramic tiles. We decorated it all from markets around there. A lot of natural materials, a stone. So it was just a really fun experience. And Bastide is a brand that exists, used to exist under the name Côté Bastide. And it was a brand that we'd known for a long time. And I loved, they made the most beautiful linens too. And I would always, you know, buy things for our home. And Frederick was a little bit involved in the business. And at some point, the woman who founded it decided that she wanted to retire and her kids weren't taking it over. And so Frederick said, I think I said to him, I said, let's do this. You know, we don't want this brand to go under. They've created such beautiful things. There was this beautiful history also of working with artisans from the region. And I felt like, you know, one thing that Frederick, that's really close to his heart is number one, the environment, you know, really keeping things, keeping the environment healthy. And then also just keeping this artisanship alive. And so what we started doing is working with different people from the region to make different things that we love. So we have a soap maker that does triple milled soaps. We have a wonderful woman who does all of our liquid soaps, and they're really made from olive oil and coconut oil, and in the old way that the Romans did, in an old, you know, in a cauldron. But they're all eco-certified labs, so it's very high-end, but made in a process that's very good to the earth. So this woman, for instance, her name is Beatrix. She used to work for big companies and realized that a lot of the soap formulations she was making were seeping, you know, were going into the ground, and they were actually burning the ground. And so she said, when I make soap, I want to do it the old-fashioned way with real coconut and olive oil, so that when, and you know, anything goes into the shower, into the drain, it's still healthy for the environment. So what we really found is, like, working with people who live there, who love this place as much as we do, you create products that are good for the earth and that also give you this special feeling. And
good for the soul as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of soul. Yeah. And I think, you know, we've put a lot of soul into the products. I mean, I think the other thing is that we wanted to be able to feel that feeling of moss when we're in our shower in New York, you know? So you have this, you know, we have a honey lavender that it's just, every time I, you know, use it in the mornings, I think of the lavender fields with the butterflies and the bees, some, you know, so there's a real energy that's in each product and a real moment of peace of, you know, we call it La Vie Bastide, which means this kind of, you know, it's like a peaceful way to live, a way to have moments of peace wherever you are. And I think, you know, again, like, people are so stressed today, there's so much traffic, there's so much going on, that the more you can have these moments, the more your life becomes happy and meaningful. I mean, I always think about that when I'm drinking a cup of coffee. I'm like, you know, I'm in this moment, I'm present, I'm drinking this lovely cup of coffee, and that's going to give me a force throughout the day. And so for Bastide, we think about that with every product we make, is that it really should have this moment of something special and you know, and meaningful. So I think the fact that they're made by people we care about, you know, who care about the earth, And then also kind of always capturing the fragrance of nature that we have when we're there makes them really special.
If you want to join our Patreon or check out the video format of this podcast, make sure to use the links in the description.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Future of Fashion Business. Make sure you subscribe to listen to our future episodes.